The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for Titanic 2 from 2010. If you do not wish to have this movie spoilt, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Is it a movie full of Titanic grandeur, or is it a rusted wreck? We watched Titanic 2 from 2010 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
So bad it's good, what's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad dialogue, dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project, this time checking out Titanic 2 from 2010. I am one of your hosts, Trevor Holland, and I'm very happy to say that I'm rejoined after his fairly extended absence by my good friend and co-host,
Christian Fletcher. Wow, thank you so much, Trevor. It's so great to be back. And but good to see you've been holding the fort well with some other guest presenters as well with the Rufus Project.
Yeah, it seemed like a fun time to do a few experimental podcasts that have been I've been thinking about trying for a while. So breaking the seal on doing commentary tracks.
Yep.
And rather odd TV movies.
And at the same time, too, sparing me having to watch them, which in some cases, or in most cases, is probably a good idea.
Okay, I know you're upset with missing out on the Ferris Bueller TV show.
Oh, I know. But hey, the good thing is, if the pilots or the movies are bad, we know that the chat's always good anyway, and I really enjoyed that one. So, listeners, there's a bit of a plug for the Ferris Bueller TV pilot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that was a fun one to do if not too, I don't know, it doesn't make sense. That was a terrible, terrible show.
So you're getting sort of Trevor's ideas of it. But you can definitely listen back to that and all the other atrocities / great movies that we've watched.
Absolutely. Now, Christian, you suggested Titanic 2 before you headed off, so yeah. If anybody out there hasn't watched this yet, you've had plenty of time to do it before this podcast came out. Seriously.
Oh, and I must admit, I even got, if I can throw in the sinking, I got the sinking feeling, that's my first pun, as I was coming back actually into Australia, I was thinking, oh no, I suggested Titanic 2, what went through my head? So I have done a watch of it recently, and I don't know whether I regret that decision, but not really the movie I hope to have my comeback with, but we'll see what happens.
Absolutely. Now, if anyone out there hasn't seen Titanic 2, and I get a feeling there's probably quite a few of you, I've got a bit of a synopsis here. On the 100th anniversary of the original voyage, a modern luxury liner christened Titanic 2 follows the path of its namesake. But when a tsunami hurls an iceberg into the new ship's path, the passengers and crew must fight to avoid a similar fate.
Interesting. And this is the only plot summary I knew going into this. And actually, I'll pass the blame. I did have a couple of people suggest this over the years. But I think it turned out a very different movie. I always think I was told something about aliens and all sorts of things. But it turned out a bit of a different movie than I thought it was going in.
And maybe some of the actors were aliens. I don't know. We'll work it out as we go.
To take this gig, I think, yes.
Quite possibly. No point talking about any awards because, nothing.
Yeah, nothing. I think this was a straight to DVD. I think I even read, you probably got facts about this, but I did read somewhere that Australia specifically got listed as a direct to DVD, whereas I think it had a limited screening or might have done cable or something in the States, but I just thought came out in Australia and just tucked to the side, probably for the Titanic anniversary. They were probably, strangely enough, released it then.
Yeah, well, it was definitely a straight to video, straight to DVD release. But if we go into our turkey trivia, the IMD rating on this is a whopping 1.6 out of 10.
Oh, I don't think we've had a movie that low for a long time.
It's been a while. It had a budget of $500,000.
I thought you were going to say millionaire for a minute. I thought, gosh, that'd be resurfacing the original Titanic and doing it up for the movie, I think, for that price. But half a million dollars, huh?
$500,000 and no information about how much money it's made. And I won't comment on how much money I think it should have made because, you know, obviously and, that would give away.
And I might be jumping ahead a little bit, but I believe it was made for by Asylum Pictures, who release a lot of stuff through the Sci-Fi Channel. And I think are the gang behind Sharknado and all those giant monster movies as such.
Quite possibly. No, it definitely was Asylum. So, yeah, I know that they're responsible for some questionable content out there that seems to have its fans.
Think Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus, all that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. As soon as I saw that in the opening credits, I am jumping ahead. I sort of was seeing immediately what kind of movie we were getting. And the fact that I believe that it went, I think that's what I heard, in the States it went straight to Sci-Fi Channel and played on repeat on its release. So, yeah, it seems very much something of that channel.
Pretty much. Now, to talking about some of the actual trivia about it, it's not an actual sequel to the movie Titanic. Titanic 2 is the name of the ship, so that's basically the entirety of the connection there.
And talk about a way to lure people in. They would have made money, if this made any money, it would have made money on that title alone, especially for curiosity factor. But for people trying to trade in on Titanic, you think you wouldn't have waited, what was it, 13 years to come up with another one. You think they would have done something around 97.
Quite possibly, but interestingly though, even though it's not an actual sequel, it does have a nod to the movie. So when the iceberg strikes, there's a display screen showing the hull integrity analysis, and it's got a warning that the Ismay Rosejack threshold has been exceeded. So there you're referencing J. Bruce Ismay, the chairman of the White Star Loan, which operated the original Titanic, and also a reference to the characters Rose and Jack from the film.
Aha, clever. I didn't even see that. So, but I don't know if you've known, you might even have the IMDb page open. I did believe I read somewhere that it's actually called Titanic 2, Jack is Back. Am I imagining this? Or am I thinking?
I think what happens, there's a bunch of, when you go searching for information on this, there's a bunch of, I think, joke trailers.
Okay.
Of Titanic 2, where Jack rises from the watery depths.
Hey, you never know. That could have been a much more interesting movie, but hey, I don't want to say too much. But yeah, so good to know you've sort of helped me work out. I'm the whole time, because I think there's a character called James or something like that, and I'm all John. I'm like, oh, maybe it's him. So good to know that's where that comes in.
Definitely not. So now there was a real life project for a Titanic 2, which was the brainchild of Australian tycoon Clive Palmer, who announced it in April of 2012, which was the centenary of the Titanic's journey. And he had plans to construct a modern-day replica of the Titanic to sail the same route as the original vessel. The original launch date with this was going to be 2016. It has been delayed to 2018, but no construction has started, and it's pretty strong rumours that the whole thing's been abandoned.
Oh, gosh. So I don't know if you could really say it's life imitating art. So it's easy for us to laugh at this, at the concept of this movie, Titanic 2, but hey, there's people out there, and I believe there has been other, did a bit of a search, and there's been other Asian countries that have tried it as well. So they seem determined to do it at some stage, but I don't know, I feel a bit icy going in, let's just say.
Yeah, I can imagine anyone trying to do that sort of project will get cold feet eventually.
Mm-hmm. And the puns continue. I'm glad.
But what really surprised me, this is probably the most surprising bit of trivia, was that for this film, the RMS Queen Mary was used as a stand-in for the Titanic 2 during the departure scenes and some of the interior shots. And this ship had been used as stand-ins previously for the ship SS Poseidon in the Poseidon Adventure. And also the actual Titanic, well, stand-in for the Titanic in the 1979 television miniseries SOS Titanic.
Aha, uh-huh. So I can see, and obviously looking at it in the film, you can see why it is chosen as the, you know, for the movie or for these movies, because it's, yeah, perfect replica.
Yeah, well,
it's to our eye, like, anyway.
yeah, I mean, it's a big ship, so it's pretty much what you need.
And I think it's hard with any movie that comes out, I suppose anything post-1997 about Titanic, there's easy comparisons to James Cameron, but I'm sure they were very much influenced by that as well.
I think we will probably mention a few things about that as we go, funnily enough.
Even though there's been many movie versions, but I'm sure the James Cameron one was fresh in their minds.
Quite possibly. So before we do talk about the movie, we do like to set our baseline. So this is what we see with... this is where we see what we're working from, I should say. So I've been online and I found a review to get us started. The title of this one is simply Wretch! Exclamation mark. An absolute waste of money, packaging, and product. This extremely low-budget film was a combination of poor CG that, if they spent a dime, would be over budget. It was filmed at the Queen Mary Hotel in Long Beach, in a hotel of all places. The climbing scenes were a poor copy of Batman and Robin climbing buildings, and like all low-budget films, the starlets were overinflated and had their own life preservers. One star.
Oh, you got to give them stars for stars for comedy in that review. But yeah, I know that I did have a bit of a browse through IMDb, and I did struggle to find a good review at all. So it'll be interesting to hear at the other end of the podcast if you can come up with one of those.
Yeah, I had to do a bit of digging.
I can imagine.
And, I mean, just getting started, like I would like to do before I start playing this movie, is to have an eye over the running time. You just squeeze this one in just under 90 minutes.
Oh, I'm so happy. And even then, you know, I think they could have done with chopping a lot off, but we could deal with that. And I think it's one of those movies, too, where the opening credits and the closing credits just went for ages. So you're like, oh, well, they've trimmed about 10 or 15 minutes off the running time. Even better. So this one won't waste as much time getting into it like, say, the James Cameron version.
Yeah, quite possibly, or will it? But it does start with some nice snowy vistas and a bit of an operatic score, which I thought was pretty high class.
I don't know. I was getting hints of the Titanic soundtrack, not the Celine Dion song, but you know the actual, you know, the pipe music and all that, which they kind of use. And I don't know if it was just me automatically trying to pick out similarities between the 1997 movie, but and I thought it was kind of cheeky them opening with the ice caps and the icebergs is sort of foreshadowing, because it's Titanic 2. We obviously know what's gonna bloody happen.
yeah foreshadowing. You accuse this movie of foreshadowing. I think that's foreshadowing some of our comments as well.
I've been doing that since you press play.
yep.
But so definitely, and you know, let's just say they were talking before about the dime priced special effects. I don't think any much money would have gone into the opening credits either in terms of the text. So no, I knew definitely, as I was saying earlier, being an asylum film or a sci-fi channel film, not much was going into that. It was probably more into the really bad CGI effects.
I dare say. And I tell you what, it starts pretty extreme with the guy going Arctic surfing or whatever he was doing.
Oh, I was waiting. It took ages before it started getting into it. I'm like, what's going to happen? I was waiting for a Jaws moment where they'd start to show the legs dangling. Even that would have been more exciting. But when he eventually does sort of see this tidal wave or the tsunami or whatever in the distance, he seems so underwhelmed. Like a lot of people in this movie, he kind of doesn't. It sort of was a scene that was sort of building up for something to happen, and we just see CGI waves. don't really get you too excited or draw you in.
A CGI chunk of ice drops from a glacier, which causes the wave, which happily surfs, and then a big chunk falls, and it's like, oh no, and you don't even, I don't think you even see it hit him.
Oh,
it's kind
no,
of like,
really
there's a shot of him, and then there's a shot of this big wave going past, you're going, fair enough.
And as with,
I wasn't expecting.
As with every actor in this movie, I sort of find there's a bit of a delay reaction to everything, and almost like it's like the director didn't say, okay, get really overwhelmed or, you know, angry or whatever during this scene. So yeah, it doesn't sort of go where it's supposed to, especially for an opening scene. It could have been this really cool opening scene and then Titanic 2 on the screen, but no. It goes straight to the shot of the Coast Guard, and you know that he's someone who's about to get called about the glacier, and he is.
Yeah, it pretty much, and then it's like it's all foreshadowing. Like most of his dialogue is pretty much foreshadowing, as he's talking to talking to random guy on radio in background, who is just there to basically feed him his lines and set him up for the expositional dialogue.
And you know, I don't know if I'm jumping ahead. I think it might have been that I think they start boarding the plane, I mean the boat already, but it might be in that Coast Guard conversation when he starts talking to his daughter, who, foreshadowing again, happens to be a steward on the boat that's going out, leaving, and already you're going, oh, so I know where this is going, but could you have made it a little less obvious? You know,
yeah.
It's one of those stories, we know going into Titanic what's going to happen, but it's how you tell the story, and they weren't wasting any time. It's like they couldn't wait to get to the sinking of the ship. Shock. Spoiler.
Yeah,
weren't bothering giving any sort of character development. And what I love is how the passengers just board Titanic 2 with not a care in the world, which I still scratch my head at, even as Clive Palmer wants to do it as a real situation. Like, you think, these people that are actually willing to do this, aren't they a bit concerned? But no, these people are just ready to party.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm positive that, like, there was at least 5 or 6 scenes which showed the exact same shot of people waving from the bow.
Yeah, from different angles. Yeah.
Not even from different angles, just from the dock looking up. It's just like, they kept showing the people waving. It's like, they're the same people. It's the same shot. You're just repeating it.
Oh, especially that one particular steward that's like, oh, I've got to go up and wave. And she made sure she was waving as much as she could. Maybe she's worried that her scene was going to get cut out. But I love how, again, the foreshadowing in the dialogue. I'd love to see most of these passengers drown rather than give them CPR. And I'm like, oh, love, probably, some of them are going to start drowning very soon. So I probably wouldn't say that. But this movie already stoops to those kind of levels straight away.
Pretty much. And then our hero, played by lead actor and director of this movie, Shane Van Dyke, as Hayden Walsh, turning up in a helicopter and stepping out. I mean, we'd already had a lingering butt shot of the two stewards coming up the stairs, and they're like nurses or something. You never actually see the doctor. You only see these nurses.
Yeah, yeah.
But then when there's Hayden guy steps out of the helicopter with three girls in his arms and it's just panning across the tightness of their chest area, going, can you be any more lingering?
Yeah.
No, you can't. Okay, you can be more lingering. You're just zooming right in at this level and you just do not care about anything else right now.
And this was actually one of those moments where I literally thought to myself, this is Titanic 2. What, like, even I was questioning that the movie had gone off. It should be more about Titanic. And, like, we've suddenly gone into boobs and hunks territory, you know. And I don't know, it kind of felt in pretty bad taste that it's gone sort of teen sleaze comedy sort of vein, and I thought, oh, maybe that was going to be sort of the style of the rest of the movie, but no, that was just to introduce our rather unlikable lead man.
Yeah, I think the point of it was to make people think it was going to be a sleazier movie in order to get a particular section of the audience to keep watching, in the hope that there may be even more voyeuristic shots further in the movie. They would have been very disappointed. Anyone who watched this movie for the titillation factor would be fresh out of luck.
Oh, my God, yeah. And also, yeah, and with a bad taste in your mouth too, because that's weird, yeah. They'd expect to want to watch Titanic 2 for something like that. But, hey, as we've said, it kind of teased at the start anyway, and it was completely unexpected. But then it all just keeps going, and they don't make him any more likable. Not that this movie's ever about character development, but that Hayden guy, if he's supposed to be the hero as such, or the Jack counterpart, I suppose, they could have got someone a bit better or someone a bit more charismatic, because this guy just came off like an idiot or, you know, an asshole pretty much from dot.
Yeah, I mean, I realised I was setting up as being a complete sleazebag. You find out that he was once the boyfriend of the lead female, played by Brooke Burns.
I've got his name, Amy, I think her name was.
Kim.
Oh, Kim, that's right.
No, Amy. That's right. No, Amy. Oh, God.
I think it was Amy. God, listen to us fighting over stewards from Titanic 2.
No. Okay. It was, yeah. Marie Westbrook, who played Amy Main as the leading lady.
Amy Main as the main female. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, we've got their names right.
Yeah, and of course I have the awkward moment where Hayden comes out of a lift, and he's only got two of the girls in his arms at that point, but still pretty much the exact same pose as before, and they have a face-to-face, and it's just like, is this meant to be awkward? I can't tell, because
it's they're the just kind of like saying,
so, how are you? I'm good. Welcome aboard. Okay. Well, I better get to work. Okay, then. Bye. What? No.
And that's the problem. All the dialogue is so predictable and so, yeah, mundane like that. And it's all trying to do exposition that we know is going to happen, and it's probably not necessary, you know, especially like, I don't know, I think it was just after that where we've got the Coast Guard again on the phone with his daughter, who was the steward. I think, is that Amy or Kim?
Amy.
Yeah. Amy. Look, we're getting them right.
Kim was the scientist on the glacier.
Oh, that's right. And Kelly's the one that ends up.
And Kelly is the other.
Might die.
Yes. She was the one that got the butt shot.
Yeah.
Was our Kelly.
So there you go. And
didn't care for the patients or the passengers at all.
But we go straight into the Coast Guard, who I love how laid back these people are. How he's pretty much like, oh, the ship barely passed inspection, and things like to his daughter, oh, there's nothing to worry about. But sorry, he said there's nothing to worry about first, and then she starts grilling him about the safety of the ship, and he goes, oh, well, barely passed inspection, you know. And it seems to be everybody except the joyous passengers who are waving seem to be wary of the ship. Everyone is wary of it except the passengers, and it's like from day one, but there's just sort of no care about it. He's just so chilled, that Coast Guard.
Yeah. Yeah, as he's flying off to the glacier where he's got a report that there's something bad's happening in this big glacier up in the Arctic. And I did like, but that actually made me laugh, was as this dodgy CGI helicopter flew towards the dodgy CGI glacier, the ocean underneath, there was actually like a glitch in the graphics, and like the section of the ocean just wobbled as the helicopter flew over top. It's like, yeah, are you serious?
Oh my God. And you're still wondering where $500,000 went to.
They obviously couldn't afford to re-render that bit of graphics.
Maybe they're really thinking, hey, just two guys who do a podcast are going to watch this years from now. They'll be the only people that have to see it.
Yeah.
But I was talking about making unlikable characters as well as unlikable CGI. But unlikable characters, is this really bad to say you actually are just waiting for half of these idiots or characters to die? It's really terrible, but they're just not sort of building you up to any sort of form of, you know, likability. We're not even getting a chance to even get to know them, because they're just sort of racing straight to, you know, the inevitable.
Yeah, well, because essentially, basically, I think, there's only three people that are still alive at the end of the movie, which is just like, oh, sorry, spoilers.
Yeah.
But, they take time out to sort of, like, try to make you feel sorry for passengers, or they focus in on passengers being hurt later, or there's another scene that I'll get to in a bit. This is just completely out of left field, where they're trying to make you care about these people, but they're basically all there to be so much, you know, so much carnage, I guess, at the end of the day, to try to give this some sense of scope, which it never really has. And let's be honest.
And I think
I don't know. I can't even fake this, Christian. I am sorry. There's going to be no secret. I'm going to feel about the movie at the end.
Trust me. I know where this is coming from, and it was a totally different movie. I was still, even now, going, okay, I'm waiting for the aliens that someone told me was apparently in this. But, spoiler, there wasn't any aliens, but I kind of wish there had been. And as we said, it was probably the actors. And again, even at this stage, even when people start to sort of find out, it's like everyone's just so chilled out. And I think there was a part where... I am jumping ahead here, but there's a part where they alert everybody in the on the dance floor, but it looks like it was just shot in a school gym or in the Royal Mary Hotel, by the sounds of it. But when they get the tsunami alert and are told to go down to the lower level, and the more thing that they're upset about is the fact that they stopped the music. Everyone's like, oh, you know, just like the last song at the end of a party. You're just thinking to yourself, you've gone on a thing called Titanic 2, there's alarms going off, and they're telling you to put on your life jackets. I think... Yeah, you're probably regretting this voyage.
I was happy they stopped that music. When they were dancing to that music, I was thinking nobody would dance to that music. That song was terrible. The fake dancing to the horrible music was kind of actually suitable for any time there was a shot of the actual Titanic on the ocean. I could not get over how fake that all looked. It was basically looked like it was just a model on a flat plane of like glass with just like a the bare minimum needed to sort of like CGI in the wake of the boat. But for I just was thinking that ship's not moving.
Yeah,
that ship's not moving at all.
No, it's don't.
Just sitting there.
Don't know if it was in those shots, but definitely in the shot where it first leaves the dock when it first takes off or leaves. Sorry, not takes off. And I just love how quickly it glides through the water. You're like, okay, a ship of that size would not go that fast.
Yeah, maybe it was being towed by the three jet flyover that happened when it launched.
That was probably that was the most laughable of the whole thing. I think probably the fact that they used three different bright colors, it just made it stand out so much more as being fake.
Oh, that was just atrocious. And then yeah, this shot basically it's just a shot of just a harbor, and then suddenly there's a wonking great big graphic gets pushed across the front of it with a terrible looking waves lapping up from the front, and you're going, okay, fine. Why am I expecting anything more from this movie? I just need to lower my expectations so it doesn't keep making me feel that it should be more. But no matter what I did, it always seemed to manage to get lower as it went along.
Definitely, in the poorest possible taste, I think. And I think you hit the nail on the head before when you said the words carnage. It just felt like they wanted to not remake Titanic, but possibly tell the story again, but in probably the most gruesome way that they could, without offending too many people.
Quite possibly, because I do like when they get to the actual glacier, and the Coast Guard dad. I just call him Coast Guard Dad.
I had no idea what his name was. He was Jack to me.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, talking to the scientist. Kim, about what's happening, and then as they're talking, there's this random dude picking up canisters full of ice samples, and he just like drops one, which obviously has like no weight because it just basically bounces on the ground a few times, and then all these terrible looking cracks start appearing, so it's like that one canister dropping was what tipped the scale to make the thing break apart. Good job, movie. Good job.
And there was a lot of shots, I think, excuse me, when we first meet Kelly, and she was just standing in the fakest, don't know if it was when she was supposed to be in the helicopter, but yeah, just the fakest background behind her. Looked like kids had just done and photoshopped what they'd imagine a cockpit of a plane to look like.
yeah, it was all... None of it looked good, to be honest. But at least the guy who dropped the canister and caused all these problems, we know that it was his fault. Like even when they make him fall through a crack in the ice, even that is just like they get him to do a pose. He does a lot of mugging for the camera first. But then they like just get him to a pose, and you can kind of just tell that they just put that on top of this dodgy CGI and then just pull the model straight down. Like they grabbed it, they clicked it with a mouse and just dragged it down at a shot.
Oh, so there you go, listeners. You're getting a bit of an idea of the special effects from this movie.
Yeah. Special.
Special is probably not the word.
Not the word, no.
Yeah, effects, yeah. But I just couldn't believe, look, I know we're probably going to end up being all over the place, but I 30 minutes into the movie and pretty much, I must admit I'm already going, okay, we know it's going to happen, when's it going to be over? But anyway, 30 minutes in and they're already pushing the engines to the max, so you're thinking, well, they've definitely gone away with character development and trying to build a love story very similar to the 90s movie, but no, this one's just all about what carnage they can bring.
Yeah, well, you know, having lots of carnage in a giant ship that only has two nurses, that's a good call. I mean, only having two nurses on this ship is just... And they're always saying, like, you know, the secondary nurse, the not main character nurse, when she decides to go up, and you go, oh, don't let the doctor catch you. Where's the doctor? Where is the doctor? You never see this mythical doctor.
And later on... Well, I think later on when I think it's Kelly, he ends up getting squashed by a cabinet when the when the iceberg hits, and she's and I think the guy's rummaging. I think it's Hayden rummaging around for the tape in the first aid cabinet. I'm thinking, for a first aid cabinet on a ship of that size with only two nurses, they don't have much in the way of supplies.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's probably why I barely passed. Yeah. Because you got completely inadequate medical facilities here.
And then we find out pretty much, I think they spend about 10 or 15 minutes trying to get everybody into the, with their life vests on and the life raft. And the next thing we find out from Coast Guard Dad, oh, they're death traps. Get everybody out. Actually, no. Yeah. As long as his daughter's not in it, it's fine.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. He doesn't care about anybody else but his daughter.
I love how he's pretty much, you stay, find a way to get from here to there. And it's like no talk of bringing anyone else with you or anything like that, as long as she's okay.
But yeah, I mean, when the iceberg actually hits. So just to a bit of a thing, so... there's this initial chunk that drops off this glacier in terrible CGI form, and then you get shots of this wave going across, and when it actually reaches the Titanic, it's like this full widescreen wave with just like this one chunk of ice right in the middle. It's like the odds of that hitting anything in the open ocean are pretty small, but of course that one chunk of ice, which compared to the Titanic, it's not that big. Hits the Titanic too, dead center, as it does. Yeah. At the same time, they've gotten everyone downstairs to get to the various life raft things, and Coast Guard Dad saying, "Oh no, don't send them down. Make sure they go up." Why? Because that hitting the ship obviously caused it to start sinking, but it didn't actually seem to do anything major to the people that were waiting to get into the life rafts.
Yeah, they're all standing there very, pretty much just waiting for the next one to arrive. And meanwhile, on the next level, you've got people going berserk, you know.
Yeah, and meanwhile, on deck, the highest you can get in the ship, there's people all over the place. They linger over bloodied legs and
people crawling up the stairs and trying to get past. And you actually are waiting for more carnage in respect to sort of the deaths of the people. But no, it just seems to be lingering shots of these people crawling.
Yeah, well, that's how Hayden can start getting his redemption arc, where they're trying to get him to evacuate on a helicopter, and he sees them all, and it cuts back to him, and it cuts back to the lingering, and it cuts back to him being told to get on the helicopter, and then it cuts back to the lingering shots of the wounded people, until he finally goes, "No, get as many of these injured people onto the helicopter as you can," as he stands there and strikes a vaguely heroic pose.
Oh, I know, because that's the thing, don't we find out at one stage it's actually his boat?
Yeah, it's his boat. Yeah. Like, he ended up, like, his dad died or something, and he became the sole owner of this company, and as such, he could just make this boat.
And for some reason, I think, too, he's also assumed by everybody that he's got the answer for what we're supposed to do now. Because I don't think they were expecting that, even though calling it Titanic 2 was probably... Yeah, anyway, it all goes back to a lot of questions.
pretty much. Actually, when everyone's panicking, it goes to the shop with all of these people running around panicking. I noticed there was one set of stairs that they just kept showing people coming up. Yeah. And, like, nearly everybody tripped. Stairs looking, those stairs are too slippery, people. That's another reason why this only barely passed inspection.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. They needed some carpet or something in those stairs, because so many people fell over coming up those stairs.
But you just sort of, I think the level of panic was still, acting wise, was probably still not as hysterical as you'd expect for people going, "Oh my gosh, Titanic 2 has just had, is making us do this," because it's obviously something bad going to happen. Again, silly people for going on it in the first place. But because I don't know if it's around this stage where we get from the Coast Guard that, oh that's right, because we're talking about the getting out of the lifeboats, and then we find out because another wave's about to come, so it's probably more important that, Hayden and his daughter are safe.
Pretty much, but then they do, because they evacuate the glacier. Everyone who doesn't get on the helicopter is apparently dead already, and they're flying across the ocean. I've got no idea how far this helicopter can go or how fast it can go, but it covers a lot of area, because it's basically going from the Arctic to
to America, because it's going the reverse route, I think, of what the original Titanic did, leaving from America, and that's what was the plan. So he gets, like, a radio call saying that another chunk's gone off the glacier. Who's there to tell him that it fell? What? How does he know? How does anyone know about the second chunk that falls and causes an even bigger wave?
It's probably the surfer guy from the opening scene. He seems to be the one that calls in.
Oh, he was still alive. Okay.
He's a secret messenger.
He went, I know the chunks fell off, and this wave is amazing!
Hang ten.
Woo!
But, oh, yeah. But then it seems to be, yeah, he seems to be getting tips all the time. this lucky Coast Dad, even from Coast Dad. Actually, no, that's got a better ring to it. But because then you've also got I think it's around this time when half the boat ends up exploding, and you've got Hayden and what's the girl again, Kelly or whatever, and the two girls, I think. No, it is
Kelly was the inevitable sacrifice.
That's
Amy.
Right.
Hayden.
Yes,
and Amy.
That's right. When Hayden and Amy are in the elevator, I think there's even a scene in Titanic that, again, I'm comparing to the James Cameron one where they get stuck in an elevator for a bit. I don't know. That felt like such a ripoff. I just thought it's so, not funny, but interesting that a whole movie about Titanic sinking and they have to have them stuck in an elevator. I don't know. It just seems like wrong theme, guys. I don't know. I have something else happen to them. But yeah, that must have been a ripoff of the other movie, I think.
Yeah, but when that explosion did go off, and they have a few shots of a few people around the place, like the captain's left his super high tech control center, which was basically just some TV screens in a room with Venetian blinds, super high tech,
definitely.
And there's like a section of like old style ship controls and like a roped off area, and he goes and stands at the old style helm. And things start exploding, but it did let them to get in one staple of most movies. A lot of movies like to chuck at a Wilhelm scream every now and then. So it was nice to know this one actually did use the Wilhelm scream.
Oh, yes. No, I think, yeah, I definitely think by here, not that I was caring too much about any of this, I was just wanting that ship to go down and this movie to be over with.
Yeah, yeah, that would have been nice. I'm thinking, the entire ship didn't explode. We've got more to go.
I know, especially now that we're trying to focus on Hayden and, what do we say, Amy. So, see, that's how much I care when we have to focus on them. Yeah, you were really at the stage where you're like, we don't care if there's any kind of relationship developing. We don't care if you're supposed to be the surrogate Rose and Jack, because I must admit, I suppose they had a couple more hours in the other Titanic to develop the story more. But, yeah, it just felt like this was an extra bit that they could have done away with, but they kind of had to have to give the story some kind of conclusion, I suppose. And what a conclusion it was, not what I was thinking.
Well, look, I was after they rescued Kelly from the med bay or whatever, I kept thinking, why did you just leave her behind? Why are you still taking her with you? I know you've got to climb a ladder with this woman who allegedly has got some serious damage to her. Oh, that's okay. The ladder climbing sequence is you're actually crawling across a floor, and you are crawling. You're not even trying to make it look like climbing. And just the appropriate camera tilt to sort of like give it a sense that they're going vertically rather than horizontally.
Oh god, the things they stoop to or things they climb to, I think is probably more appropriate.
But things they crawl to.
Sounds like this movie anyway. But yeah, the whole fact that we then have the Coast Guard dad saying pretty much that they have to get to the diving tanks in order to pretty much survive. And it was, honestly, by this stage, I wasn't really caring. I thought it was really, I don't know, an extra bit that they'd brought in to try and sort of, you know, give it the climax or give it an ending, but I really wasn't interested.
Yeah, I mean, like, when he said that the second wave was going to completely destroy the lifeboats and anyone in the water was as good as dead or whatever, they cut to this one woman in one of the lifeboats, and I think she was cast entirely for her crying face. They had like three or four shots of her just going
that's right.
Before this wave hit and we mercilessly didn't have to see her anymore.
Were we supposed to feel really sympathetic? Because unfortunately I wasn't. And it's a shame because this movie was making you feel all these feelings. But you've got to realise this was actually a tragedy. But we've got to think, okay, maybe what they're documenting is actually a second voyage that, yeah, was all made up. Yeah. But I don't know. It just seems to be in very poor taste where they're almost taking the tragedy of what happened on Titanic and kind of giving us this.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, these shots of other people that, you know, you never had anything to do with in this movie, and they're trying to do it to add a, I don't know, add suspense or add some sort of flavor, like when they're going, when Fake Rose and Fake Jack, I'll call them that now. That's yeah. Fine. Fake Rose and Fake Jack are running through, and they come across this door, and there's a guy hidden, there's a guy stuck behind it, and they're trying to save him, and they really linger with this guy who for some reason is going to suddenly suffocate not long after they turn up, and they even stop with him sort of like coughing, and he spits blood across the wall before slumping and dying in this fire-filled room, and you get a shot of Fake Jack basically doing the whole no. And 5 seconds later, it's back to business as usual.
Oh, there's a few parts there, because I think it's one of the stewards. I think it might be Kelly. I don't know. When one of them dies in the elevator, I think it's Kelly, actually, that eventually goes. There's the same thing. It's the whole, Kelly's died. No. And I couldn't believe, yeah, there was a couple of times when they did things like this, and I'm like, wow, it actually does exist. And that's why it does make you wonder with this movie, whilst it's being very tongue-in-cheek, it's probably picking a subject matter that it shouldn't be. Still too soon.
Yeah. Well, look, Kelly died because there was like a door that this metal axe, it would crush this metal axe, and this metal axe could barely keep open. Yet Kelly falls through the gap as it closes, of course, and dies. Instead of just lopping her in half because it had crushed the metal head of an axe, you know, her body actually managed to keep the door open so Hayden could get through. Fake Jack.
It's so ridiculous. I shouldn't be laughing about it, but yeah, it is that ridiculous.
And he's like three times the size of her. There's no way, even if she had left a gap with her crushed corpse, there's no way he could have fitted through it. But he has no problem getting through it at all.
Just runs through, but
he's just suddenly on the other side of the door with Fake Rose. It's like, hang on, how'd you get through that? Yeah. Oh, okay, fine, whatever. Just get to the dive locker so we can just get on with this.
Yeah, and it got to that stage too where when they do finally sort of get there, and I know it sort of takes a bit to get there, I was beyond caring. I was more interested to see how they're going to try and end this movie, or if they're going to try and give it some romantic finale that's, you know, that we technically have been missing the whole way through, you know, assuming that we cared about their love story. But yeah, the ending is, yeah, it keeps with the downbeat feeling of Titanic in general.
Yeah, well, I mean, what? There's only one dive suit in the dive locker, so of course Fake Rose is the one who gets to put that on. We get a brief shot of her in her underwear, which I'm sure was entirely put in there 100% on purpose.
Yeah. Shame that the people that wanted that had to wait all that time to see it, but
and that's all they got. Yeah. They would have been very disappointed for people for being there for that sort of situation.
Scintillation.
Yep. and yeah, like as they started filling up with water, I just thought, oh, is this going to be the scene where Fake Jack sacrifices himself for Fake Rose? Oh, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, no. but then he's talking that if she lets him drown, the water's so cold that she'll probably be able to give him CPR. So, like, the whole setting up the whole, oh, okay, they're going to bring him back, and we'll have a happy ending after Coast Guard Dad finally gets there, just as the helicopter runs out of fuel, of course.
How convenient, even though he's been flying all night. Just runs out there.
Yeah, at that very, very second, and Fake glacial scientist chick drops down with a life raft and a rope. A rope which also keeps disappearing as he's diving down into the Titanic to try to save his daughter from the dive locker. I was just thinking, okay, fine. And then when he finally does pull her out, I'm thinking, why are you pulling out the corpse of Hayden, Coast Guard Dad? I mean, really, this ship is sinking at a fast pace, and if it gets too deep, you just have to be cut off, and then they're following the rope back up, and the rope's tied to something underneath them, but it's not being pulled down or anything like that. I think, what have you got the rope tied to? If it's still tied to the ship, it'd be pulling down the entire life raft by now.
They're probably just thinking by now, no one would have cared or would still be watching.
Well, I was watching this with my redeeming features hat on, so I had to pay attention to this crap.
You caught it. Yeah. Oh. Oh, and it was one of those things where, yeah, I just wanted this bloody movie to end.
Yeah, and they finally, okay, look, let's just wrap this up. There's a lot of other stuff that happens. They have to avoid a wire in a hallway on water, whatever, blah, 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 blah,
but it's all obstacles like we saw in the James Cameron movie, just done poorer. Yeah,
poorer, incredibly bad. But yeah, they get up there and then they drag the frozen corpse of fake Jack up there, and fake Rose is giving him mouth to mouth and doing the whole breathe, breathe, and there's a slow zoom in on his face where he doesn't wake up.
You're waiting for that last minute coffin splatter, but no.
Yeah,
I even had to watch it back a second time to make sure I hadn't missed anything there. But
No. he stays dead.
Yep, and then I think the next thing's then a shot of her with, you know, crying on Coast Guard Dad's shoulder, and then I think one more shot of the corpse, and then the credits roll.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, there is like a dawn breaks, and some helicopters finally turn up to get essentially the one survivor from the entire debacle, being fake Rose, and then yeah, it just goes to black, and that's it. It just ends, and then they make that operatic score work super hard over those closing credits. And we get the terrible song from
sounded like something out of a really bad goth film or something like that, the song sounded like. So out of place, actually. But again, I know that Titanic, the story, is always going to have a downbeat ending, but I just wasn't expecting them to do it as that. They could have redeemed it in some way, because we're having trouble redeeming it. But anyway, it ended how it ended.
It did, and it just ended. And it felt a lot more than 90 minutes.
Yeah, and I apologise now, Trevor, and because I did regret it even before I watched it. So I'm sorry that it lived up to what I thought it was going to be like. But I was hoping it was going to redeem itself. But anyway, I don't want to say too much, but yeah, I think you've got our ideas.
Well, I do have... I mean, you picked the movie, so I shall. We shall move on to our thoughts about the redeemability of this movie. Terrible acting, terrible script, terrible scenes, terrible characters, terrible CGI, terrible music, terrible camera angles, terrible sets, terrible predictability, terrible pointless set pieces, terribly cheap. This is a terrible piece of crap, and it is no way redeemable.
I think you've said just what you think.
Yeah,
and this is how much this movie is affecting me. My notes changed, and I was about to read the redeemability of Tomb Raider. So,
your notes ran away from this movie.
Yeah, so even my notes, and I'm reading it going, hang on, Daniel Craig wasn't in this. I don't get, what is it? What am I saying there? So, I don't know, maybe for a possibly better movie, it's up to you, listeners. You might have to listen to our Tomb Raider one. But yeah, look, I'm going to rattle it off. This whole thing felt in really poor taste, in really almost disrespectful to the survivors and those who perished in the Titanic. You know, what a way to cash in on it by using the title. And yeah, this could have just been a disaster boat movie using some other unrelated thing and could have still been somewhat better. But I think with the budget they had, not the budget, sorry, the talent they had involved, there wasn't much more they could do. They were focusing on action and disaster rather than giving us any character development, bad CGI, bad effects. And I didn't really care about any of these people. So yeah, I'm sorry, Trevor, and I'm sorry for those people who were curious and had to check it out.
Yeah, there was never any doubt that this was going to be a full-on not really... I think within 5 minutes I knew that there was just no saving.
Oh, I was just hoping. That alien thing would have been somewhat better, and whoever told me that lied. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Please do not try and make another Titanic movie with aliens. Don't listen to me, anyone.
No. Just let it rest, guys. Yeah. Let it rest. Okay, so shall we move on?
Yes.
We could not redeem this. And this movie does apparently have its fans. I had to dig pretty deep to find a review that I am at least moderately confident isn't sarcastic. Okay. Not 100% confident.
You never know.
Because there are a lot of sarcastic reviews for this movie. Straight up. So, this person has the title of Great Movie and Great Experience. Another truly great movie from Shane Van Dyke. A wonderful actor, screenwriter, and director. All around a very talented young man. The movie itself was absolutely wonderful, and in snippets included his two brothers as well. 5 stars.
Oh, I'm detecting sarcasm, or just a Shane Van Dyke fan, or someone who is just paying out both.
Could have been my reading of it, because I may have put a bit of sarcastic tone on top of that.
Oh, the things I'd write on IMDb if I wrote a review for this. But anyway,
yeah,
I think there'd be too many others on there anyway, as we've found. So I think we know where we stand, and let's not hope for Titanic 3.
Absolutely. I entirely endorse that sentiment. So let's move on to what we're going to watch next time, shall we?
Sure.
Okay, well, Christian, I'm taking us on a trip back into the 1980s.
Oh, wow. We haven't had a movie from that period from you for a while, Trevor, so I'm excited to see.
Yep. Now, this movie does seem to have a following, yet whenever I've mentioned it to people out of curiosity, not many people seem to have heard of it. But last year, there was even talks of a sequel for this movie in the form of a TV series directed by Kevin Smith. It bombed at the box office, despite having a cast of pretty big names at the time. I'm talking people like Christopher Lloyd, Alan Barkin, John Lithgow, Clancy Brown, and a Rufus Project return appearance by Jeff Goldblum is also coming up. And that's before we even get to the lead role, played by Robocop himself, Peter Weller.
So I know where this is going.
It's time to buckle up, head back to 1984, and check out the adventures of Buckaroo Banzai across the 8th dimension.
Aha, I knew it. And believe it or not, a movie that I tried to watch a few years ago, and I don't know, this is nothing about the redeemability of the film, but I only watched about 5 to 10 minutes of it. So I'd like to say I'm going in completely fresh, and I love a lot of the people in that cast. So, yeah, I'm excited to finally watch it all the way through, because from what I remember, it's an interesting one.
I vaguely remember watching this, I think, not long after it came out on home video back in the 80s, but I have very little recollection of the movie itself.
And
so
I do occasionally, like, it often makes, you know, list of top cult films sort of, you know, lists, and I do, you know, probably once every 5 years I'll get someone request it, but it's never been something I've gone to screen, because I think its cult is somewhat maybe not as big out here as it is in America. But hey, when you say not many people hear about it or know about it, that's a cult film. So true. I'm looking forward to checking it out.
Absolutely, and I'm at least confident that it's probably going to be a step up.
Oh, definitely.
The movie that I shall not
need. Exactly, and I think I even already own the DVD, so that's even better. There you go, no excuse. Not of Titanic 2, that if I did, that would be going into the trash.
yeah, that's something I would not admit to. Anyway. There we go. So we've got a not redeemable for Titanic 2, and we look forward to the adventures of Buckaroo Banzai across the 8th dimension next time around. So in the meantime, though, I think it's probably about time that we talk about some other things that might be coming up. So, Christian, I know you're fresh back into the country, but do you have any upcoming events you would like to plug?
Oh, there's always something coming up, and I shouldn't be in holiday mode for too much longer. We've got lots of great cult movies and classics coming up at Metro Arts in Brisbane CBD. Too many to mention here, so head to stickytickets.com.au for details about those. I've got my retro party starting back. We've got a 70s party on the 30th of June. And Rocky Horror, I think we would have just missed the last one when this one comes out, but Rocky Horror will be back in September with a live floor show, and that will include two people on this podcast. And I won't mention who, but maybe maybe Trevor and Christian. Subtle hint.
Australia. Out of all the people on this specific episode of the podcast, yes. I mean, really.
Yeah. we do have some other people. We have had some guests recently, so make sure you check out those from when I wasn't here. But yeah, lots of great things happening. Australia's biggest Madonna party is here on the 18th of August, and the Kate Bush Wuthering Heights Day is back on the 14th of July. So head to christianfletcher.com for more information, or Christian Fletcher Events on Facebook.
Absolutely. And if you want more stuff from the Rufus Project, it's not just this podcast where we talk about questionable movies, some more than others. You can also check out the What the History podcast, which is done by myself and my wife Susie, where every fortnight we dig up a couple of bizarre bits of history and make you say what the history with them. It's a nice, short, fun one. That's available over at wthpod.rufusproject.com. You can also check out the Rufus Project YouTube channel, where we release video versions of these podcasts with animated graphics and pictures that move around. I do more than just chuck a picture on front and upload it. So, you know, you get extra from the Rufus Project because we love you. I also trying to regularly do live one credit challenges. So I jump on live on YouTube and play classic arcade and pinball titles, throw in a bit of trivia about them, and then see how I go with just one credit. That's always super duper fun.
I thoroughly recommend those. That's a bit of a change from listening to us talk about bad movies or good movies, depending on how you look at it. So, but as we say, Trevor, even if the movies aren't very good, the chats are always a lot of fun.
I always look forward to these. They are so much fun. Now, if you would like to get in touch with us, that's really, really easy to do as well. If you head to our homepage, rufusproject.com, you can leave comments below this very episode. You can send us an email to podcast@rufusproject.com. Find the Rufus Project on Facebook or Twitter, and we would love to hear from you. Do you think we were too harsh on Titanic 2? Do you have thoughts on the adventures of Buckaroo Banzai across the eighth dimension? Let us know.
Definitely, and it'd be interesting to see if people do come forward about Titanic 2, but come on, I know there's some people out there that have seen it.
And they probably don't want to admit to it.
Yeah, exactly, I don't blame you, but anyway, no spoilers.
Oh, no. Okay, so on that note, I think it's time to wrap this up. So, Christian, thank you very much for chatting about this movie. I'm not going to thank you for making me watch this movie, but I will thank you for this wonderful chat about this movie.
No worries. And hey, it's been on my list, I think, since the podcast has started, and I just was waiting for the right time. So at least we found the right time, if it was the right time, and we don't have to talk about it ever again.
Well,
except when you promote
We probably will talk about it at the end of year special. We talk about the most and least redeemable.
Yeah, I think that's going to scoop a lot of categories.
Yep. And I think this evens us out for me, making you watch the full version of Batman v Superman.
Oh, no, and you're never going to live that down, are you? I'm thinking that's always the go-to long movie. So yeah, if we worry about hour-and-a-half movies, imagine the three-hour ones. But anyway.
Okay, awesome. So to everyone out there, thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time. Farewell.
President's on line one, calling about is everything okay with the alien spacecraft from planet 10, or should he just go ahead and destroy Russia?
Tell him yes on one and no on two.
Which was yes, to destroy Russia or number two?
too good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this? Do you think we should? Got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm the B, says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.